This is episode 290 of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. I'm your host, Josh Wiener, along with Seth Zillman and Jared Aubrey. And on this episode, we will be discussing the wrestling news of the past 7 to 10 days, including the recent rash of injuries. We will recap Hell in a Cell, and we are reviving an old segment from back in the day. Hey, OJ Will, get us started.
What up? This is Josiah Williams, and you're listening to the Wrestling Brethren podcast, where wrestling and pop culture collide. Yeah.
Welcome into the show. It is episode 290, and we have lots to talk about, lots to get into, but before we can do any of all that, Seth, Jarrett, how the hell are you?
Well, I know when I make the joke about the wintertime that sometimes it feels like I'm on the planet Hoth. Well, it was with the heat index for today in Chicago, and I think it felt like 109 degrees. So I think I've gone from Hoth to Mustafar.
I thought Winnipeg was Hoth. Guess not. We were at a quite comfortable 18 degrees Celsius today, and our weekend was where you guys are now. So, yeah, if it's not snowing, it's raining, then it's a heat wave, and then it's normal. Only in Manitoba can you experience all four seasons in the span of a weekend. So, welcome aboard.
That's like what they say in the Midwest, if you don't like the weather, just wait a little bit, it'll change.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just going to say. If you don't like the weather, wait a minute.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, without further ado, let's get into the wrestling news. The first topic is AEW introduced a new title belt last week on Dynamite, but it's not the one that fans have been clamoring for. It's another singles title instead of the highly anticipated yet constantly denied trios titles. It is called the All Atlantic title. It is a direct rip of the AEW women's title design. It's likely going to be the AEW version of either the Intercontinental title or the European title, or maybe a mixture of the two. There are flags on the belt for countries that are technically in the Pacific, so calling it the All-Atlantic title is kind of goofy. But right up Seth's alley, we have an 8-man tournament to determine the initial champion. But you're not getting a full tournament to a conclusion. It's an 8-man tournament that gets us to the semifinals, which then changes into a fatal 4-way at Forbidden Door. So the 8 men are, we had a match last week of Pac versus Buddy Matthews, which Pac won. This week on Dynamite, we have Ethan Page versus Miro. At probably on Rampage, we'll have Penta versus Malakai Black. And then two representatives from New Japan either are going to wrestle at a show this week, I think. And then that winner will be inserted into the Fatal 4-Way. So, guys, what do you think about the new title, the entrance, the way this is being determined, and just thoughts in general?
Well, I mean, if you factor in the Ring of Honor belts, which I can understand the argument to not do that since it's technically another promotion, that's a whole lot of belts. Like, they're going to start up having enough belts for everybody in the promotion to have. You know, there was a time when WCW had a gazillion belts. I'm trying to think what the logic is, and that just makes the Atlantic part of it even more confusing because, like you said, Japan is in the Pacific. It's not in the Atlantic Ocean. So why is it all Atlantic? I don't know if they were trying to make it sound like it was it was like a something comparable to like a North American title, just international. I think they should have just called it the international title and just be done, because what I think this may be, and this is just my speculation, this isn't based on anything I've heard or read, that this would be a title that can be defended outside of AEW shows. That's the only logic I can really see behind this. I think that was the idea for a time behind New Japan having a United States championship, so they could have that belt be defended in the United States, but yeah, it still gets defended in Japan quite a bit. Now, as far as the New Japan guys that will be a part of it, I believe the New Japan guys that will be in there, there's going to be Tomoaki Honma against a relative newcomer named Clark Connors, who is either Canadian or he's from the States. Might even be Australian, I'm not sure, but a foreigner to New Japan. And the winner of that would face the winner of Tomohiro Ishii against Yoshinobu Kanemaru. Pretty much, I'd be surprised if it's not Ishii in this. I suppose it could be Connors, because to have somebody that's like not a main guy losing the four-way. But Ishii by far is the favorite. I mean, he is the guy in there. I mean, Kanemaru's a name, but this is basically about the equivalent of, say, Miro facing the winner of a match between two cruiserweights. That's probably the best comparison I could make as far as like an AEW version. So I think it's going to be Ishii. Whether he wins the belt or not, I don't know. But if it is an international title, fine, I can get that logic, but I just cannot wrap my brain around the Atlantic stuff, especially since, like what you said, we were hoping for trios titles, because Jericho announced that he was going to be doing his cruise. I think that's early next year. But my understanding is that one of the past Jericho cruises was going to be when they were going to have their tournament for the trios titles. So maybe they're saving it for then. I don't know. And I guess I'll have to withhold judgment until after we see the four-way. But I really have to question the logic as far as why they're actually doing this.
Well, the obvious perhaps joke is sorry, Josh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, perhaps they meant transatlantic title, which indicates more travel, but I think maybe whoever gave Tony the name got some bad information.
Well, kind of along the lines of what Seth said is maybe they are going to have a belt for everybody. They're going to have like 200 belts by the time they're done. Seems a little unnecessary to me. The thing about the trios belts, I had read not that long ago, is they're waiting for Kenny Omega to return before they bring out the trios titles. So I'm not sure when he's scheduled to come back, but he was going to be introducing that belt, as far as I can remember. But I don't know. The whole Atlantic title thing is like, well, regardless of who they have for it, I mean, like, they better have it be a class of folks that are really doing nothing else. Otherwise, it's going to be just more filler. And I don't know how you get more people on TV at this point, given the size of the roster. So this could be a pretty decent sized mistake.
Well, time will tell. I'm always up for a new belt, but I hate when they copy another design. I guess that, allows them to replicate it quicker, but it is nice-ish. But design aside, I agree with what's been said already. It'll be interesting to see how quickly this gets forgotten, or if it becomes like the TNT title and just popcorns around to various competitors. Now, if they bump this up to, the equivalent of the Intercontinental title and bump the TNT down to a TV title, then, it might make a little bit more sense. But, sometimes it's really hard to guess what's going through the mind of TK. So guess we'll have to take a wait-and-see approach. All right, next news item. Roman Reigns was allegedly pulled from Money in the Bank right around the time that they pulled it from the stadium show to an arena show. And speculation is that he is only appearing at PLEs that are stadium shows moving forward. Supposedly, Reigns is still lined up to have a summer of title defenses that include Riddle, Randy Orton, and Drew McIntyre. The match versus Riddle is happening this Friday on free television on SmackDown, assuming there's no shenanigans. My question to you guys, does this news, in conjunction with both sets of unified titles, hinder your opinion and or enjoyment of the Bloodline storyline to this point?
I do have to mention Roman's tweet from a few days ago after Riddle won the match. This is what Roman wrote on Twitter. Now I have to leave the private island, jump on a private yacht, and then board the private jet just to smash this idiot. That was him, Roman, talking about Riddle. I can only assume that the idea is they're going to have Roman be kind of like how Brock Lesnar was. You only saw him a few times a year because they wanted to make it feel really big. And they do have Paul Heyman. You know, he can do the talking for Roman. But it's going to be challenging to say the least, because when they were doing it with Brock, they still had a title on the other brand that they could defend. And now with the Usos as the, whatever you call them, unified champions, I don't know if they'll ever merge the belts together or not, but it's kind of hard to say somebody's a needle mover when he is not on the show very much. So I think that's a fair criticism to have. If they're going to try to pull this off, I think having Heyman around is probably the best chance at having it. And having it do well. But like before, like we said about the All-Atlantic belt, I guess we'll just have to see how it actually comes across.
Well, this, if true, is going to impact my viewing habits, because I'm really watching WWE for Roman and the Bloodline right now. So all the more reason to DVR and fast forward through what I don't want to see. But I thought the point of, you know, when Roman did that promo at the end of the house show and he said, well, I might not be back. I forget where that was, Jersey or something. I thought the whole point was they were going to limit or remove his house show availability so that he would be around for TV and PLEs and make all those appearances, because he's the man right now. So I don't know. You know, if limiting him on regular TV is the right thing to do, like what are the networks going to say? Maybe not so much about Raw, but he's been a mainstay on SmackDown, so he's probably the biggest name in the company, and he's the star of SmackDown. So if he's not there, then I can imagine Fox not being very happy. Then how do you, if he's only going to be around for the PLEs, and I hate that friggin' acronym. If he's only going to be around for the big shows, then how do you properly build those? He can't just show up and cut promos once in a while. He's got to get involved. So, yeah, and specifically to the Bloodline, yeah, I mean, he's the mob boss. He's got to be the one directing traffic and being the godfather that he is and being amazing at it. It's definitely detrimental to the whole Bloodline thing. So it's not a very popular piece of news that I'm hearing, Josh. Thank you very much.
I do what I can, but I don't always mean to bring the downers, you know? Yeah, I agree with Jarrett, and I, you know, can see Seth from your point of view as well. I really wish they wouldn't, if this was going to be the plan all along, I really wish they wouldn't have unified the titles, because then we could at least have some storylines going on Raw. But now it just feels like both shows are being held up by Roman not being around and having both titles. I don't see them I don't see them elevating the United States title on Raw And, you know, we just talked about AEW adding a title. WWE's got to add a title or something, because they got to figure something out, because this is, people are going to lose interest fast. And people were already complaining online about the Bloodline storyline because they don't get how intricate it was. But they, like I've said many times recently, it stopped cold with the storytelling aspect of it. It was just the wrestling. And now you took away Roman, so now we've got next to nothing, except for the Usos running around, which is, you know, like having your supporting actors try to star in a show. So maybe we'll get something on Friday, because the stipulation for Friday's match is that if Roman wins, Riddle can't challenge ever again as long as Roman's the champ. So maybe we'll get some content with that. Who knows? Okay, next topic. There has been a rash of injuries across the wrestling landscape, and I'm going to go over them now. The first one started off as an injury, then became something that's not injury related, so I'll touch on that first and we can get that out of the way. AEW's Jeff Hardy originally was reported that he was banged up. Nothing specific. It was also reported he didn't remember anything from Double or Nothing. And people both in AEW and out of AEW said that he was noticeably, quote unquote, off in the match with the Young Bucks. Then we come to find out this week that it probably had nothing to do with being banged up or any injuries, but he was arrested a couple days ago in Florida, and he was arrested for DUI, driving while his license was canceled, suspended, or revoked, violation of restrictions placed on a driver's license, DUI of alcohol or drugs with a third offense within 10 years. So, not going into this too much further, other than he's been suspended by AEW without pay. They've removed the Hardy Boys from the title match on Dynamite this week. But it's obvious that he's still got problems and he needs to seek some help. He was offered help by WWE, which he refused. Now he's being offered help by Tony Khan, which he supposedly is open to. That's all I'm going to say on that. I'm going to move on to the actual injuries. AEW Scorpio Sky revealed that he has a knee injury on the June 8th Dynamite. Whether or not that's storyline or not is unknown. AEW Bryan Danielson had a rumored but then quickly refuted concussion from Double or Nothing. Suffering from an undisclosed injury, will miss 1 to 2 weeks, but should be back by Forbidden Door or sooner. Adam Cole of AEW, shoulder injury, has the same timetable as Bryan Danielson, 1 to 2 weeks, but could be back by Forbidden Door or sooner. CM Punk, AEW, first reported as a foot injury requiring surgery. However, he had the surgical procedure on Wednesday, June 8th, and it was described as a quote-unquote lower leg injury. There is footage of the injury likely being his knee, but since it would have been caused by one of his jumps from the ramp into the crowd, I feel like this is why they are downplaying that aspect of it. His recovery is listed as to be determined. Matt Cardona, Impact Wrestling and the Independents, torn bicep, also had surgery on Wednesday, June 8th, out for 5 months. He appeared at the NWA Always Ready pay-per-view, which is ironic because of the name, but also it was named after one of his catchphrases. And it turns out he wasn't ready and had to relinquish the title. Randy Orton, WWE, undisclosed injury. Not sure if it's storyline related or not. The latest report has him consulting with neurosurgeons for the next course of action, But WWE TV keeps teasing that his career might be over, which seems to be storyline driven. And finally, Cody Rhodes, WWE, torn pectoral muscle. Surgery was on Wednesday, June 8th, or Thursday, June 9th, depending on who you believe. Recovery time, 9 months, which puts him at Mania. Thoughts on all of these rash of injuries?
Well, I never like hearing about anybody getting hurt, so I wish everybody a swift and painless recovery. The Punk thing, I'd heard that was possibly that dive that he did. I too had heard that, didn't know if it was a foot or leg or whatever. I think there's audio of Jim Ross on like the satellite feed of Dynamite a week ago saying something to the effect of, well, I'll just say what they use in sports or, you know, lower leg or something like that. But I it sounds like Max Caster, at least in storyline, is trying to take credit for the injury. I don't know if that will be added to. And I mean, Cody, I know we didn't have a show last week, but for what Cody did, I mean, you talk about, gutting it out in just about every way, shape, and form, and kind of setting a standard, you might say, for, a new level of endurance. It does seem kind of, I don't want to say funny because it's not something to laugh at, but, you know, he was on the verge of the biggest push in his career, and he happens to get injured. You know, and right around the time Punk got injured as well. So two of the top baby faces in their respective promotions getting injured. Randy Orton, I haven't heard anything either as far as specifically what it is or how long he'll be out. I just assumed he was out in the storyline that it would, as far as that goes, but. A rash of injuries. The only thing I'll really say about Jeff Hardy is I hope he gets the help because, I have people close to me that have had issues like that. And, hopefully when he sobered up that day that it settled in that, he definitely needs to get some sort of help. My thoughts and prayers are with him and his brother and all that. I know what something like that will feel like, and that's all I'll say about that. But, definitely bad timing on a lot of these injuries, as if there's a good time to have an injury.
Yeah, that's a lot of substantial stars that are getting injured, right? And as Seth said, you never want to see anyone get hurt, even if it is Matt Cardona. Geez, if the Hardys were in WWE, they'd get a title run. But again, I hope he gets the help he needs. It's all unfortunate. I mean, so Punk, self-inflicted, perhaps. I think, did I call him a dumbass, Josh, in our messaging when you're telling me about it? Kind of a silly thing to do, leap into the crowd from the rap, but that is what it is. The Randy Orton thing, I thought if he caught Riddle's promo, he was talking about Randy's back. And then, so Josh, you were talking about neurological things. It could be spine related, I guess. Not entirely certain. I don't know if it's storyline or if it's real or what's going on. They did write him off TV with, the beatdown following the tag team unification. So I'm not sure how much is real and how much is storyline. And I guess Daniel Bryan's in a big spot in AEW. It's super unfortunate to have all this come together. And the timing, right? So, like you said, Punk just won the belt. He's hurt. Cody Rhodes, and I'm sure we'll talk about that when we go over the pay-per-view, but what a performance to, A, show up, and to, B, do what he did in that match with that kind of injury. Like, his arm was essentially useless. What a way to gut that one out, and what a heart that took for that. Just amazing. But on the verge of, the main event push as well. So it's the word I'm thinking of to tie all this together is unfortunate. And there's a lot of big names that are out, a lot of star power lost, and a lot of unfortunate circumstances. And I just hope everybody gets healed, gets help they need, and we see them all back sooner rather than later. Cody was talking about coming back from Money in the Bank, and you said 9 months, Josh? That's too bad.
Now, there's a possibility he super Cena's this and comes back sooner, but he's older now than Cena was back then, so I don't see 4 months recovery in his future. Could he be back by Royal Rumble? Certainly. That would put him at 6 months. We'll have to see. I will never say another bad word about Cody Rhodes wrestling-wise, period, based on that performance. And you calling him Daniel Bryan a few minutes ago leads me to remember a point during, was it Rampage? No, Dynamite, during Jon Moxley versus Kyle O'Reilly. During the ring introductions, JR was talking about Blackpool Combat Club, and he said Daniel Bryan, and then he said, excuse me, Bryan Danielson, I'm sorry. William Regal was doing commentary at the same time, and he said, I came up with that name, don't worry about it, you can say it as often as you want. I was like that's awesome.
I've only ever known him and like watched him as Daniel Bryan in WWE, that's just burnt into my brain, and I'm sure I'm going to screw that up again.
Oh, I know. I thought that chime in by Regal was awesome. All right. So, speaking of this PLE, because it was a week and a half ago and it's kind of old hat now, we're going to go through this kind of rapid fire and just give our thoughts overall, and then we're going to get into bringing back an old time segment minus the sound effects that we don't have. So let's talk about Hell in a Cell. We had gone into it with only 6 matches, and it's went up to 7, I think, before bell time. And it was one of those things where it's kind of meh on paper, but as Jarrett and Seth like to say, everybody had their working boots on, and this show got much higher praise than it probably deserved, or it did deserve it and it just got much better praise than anybody thought this show was going to turn out to be. So I will give you the results rapid fire. Opening match saw Bianca Belair retain against Becky Lynch and Asuka in a triple threat. Bobby Lashley defeated Omos and MVP in a handicap match. Kevin Owens defeated Ezekiel. The Judgment Day defeated the Faux Bullet Club. In a no-holds-barred match, Madcap Moss defeated Happy Corbin. Theory retained the United States title against Mustafa Ali. And in the main event, Hell in a Cell, Cody Rhodes did complete the trifecta and defeated Seth Rollins. And he brought his deep, dark colors of the rainbow to do it. So, briefly, and maybe a little bit succinctly when you get to the main event, what are your thoughts?
Like you said, this was a good in-ring show. I mean, the almost match was about what we expected. But outside of that, all the matches were good in this, good to great. The booking, on the other hand, is quite a bit silly here. I'll get to that in a moment. I can't help but wonder how far ahead WWE thinks, or whether they look at stuff on paper, because of course Becky had that three-way at the PLE, and then literally 24 hours later on Raw. This is one of those things, like, if somebody told you this was going to happen, you'd think that's a joke, right? Yeah, I don't think it was just an on-the-spot thing. It was an actual match for the 24/7 title, and Dana Brooke pinned Becky Lynch. Who'd have ever thought that would have happened, like, in an actual match? So I'm not saying she's buried. I'm not saying she's, they've hurt her and all that stuff. But I think if any other company had made a move like that, there would have been a lot of ridicule, and probably deservedly so. But I think that's the idea, is they're kind of putting her a little bit on a losing streak until she maybe gets a big win for a turnaround. So I think that's possible, that they might be looking at it something long term, or whether they'll just drop it and just have her get another title shot or whatnot. I don't know. What really stuck out at me was the six-man match, and not because I thought the babyfaces were going to win. I mean, I see the way they went and had no problem with the match finish until the following night on Raw, where they had Finn Balor join the Judgment Day group. And I've seen Finn Balor work as a heel before. It's not that big of a deal to me to have him have turned heel here. But then the respective faction turned on Edge. And if you look at that match, Edge is the guy that got the win, which makes zero sense for them thinking, now we know our weak point is you. Well, Edge is the guy that won the match. So now, if Damian Priest had gotten the win, then it would make sense, because especially it was done in a way where Edge did not play a factor in the finish. When you try to apply logic to this any way in the sense of storyline, it just doesn't make sense that Edge would be the guy to get the win, and then him being looked at as the weak point. It just doesn't make me want to see Edge get any revenge. It just makes you think, well, this is dumb, or another thing that could have worked is maybe Edge maybe got taken out in the match or something like that, and then they lose and then blame Edge for the loss. I could see that being it. But the big thing that gets to me is if what I've heard is true. And it was hitting around, Meltzer reported it, and I think Alvarez did as well, that the reason they did so abrupt of a change and had Judgment Day turn on Edge, it was because WWE wanted a supernatural element to be added to Judgment Day, and Edge did not like that idea. So that's why they did it the way they did it. And after all that's been going on with WWE over the past few years, I can't see how anybody in their right mind would think that going with a supernatural element would be a good idea. A supernatural element has worked exactly once, at least huge. And of course, that's The Undertaker, who I think the argument could be made, Undertaker, it was Vince McMahon's greatest creation. Because Vince did not create Hulk Hogan. He didn't create Hulkamania. He just marketed it the best. Hogan was still being classic Hulk Hogan in the AWA, complete with Hulkamania and the whole nine yards. I guess really the only thing Vince might have added is making the colors yellow and red. But several years, they did it with The Fiend, and it didn't get over. They tried doing it with Alexa Bliss, and it was weird. Every time they've tried doing this in the last few years, it's flopped, because I don't think it's the type of thing that truly works well in pro wrestling in the 21st century, in the year of our Lord 2022, because it gets too kooky. I guess it would be kind of like trying to watch Tom and Jerry and somebody pulls out a gun and actually shoots somebody. I know that's happened in cartoons before, but it's usually played for comedy. It's like it just doesn't fit with the mood that wrestling tends to have. I could see it working better in Lucha Underground because their entire tone was completely different. There was a lot of goofy stuff in Lucha Underground because Lucha Underground wasn't depicted as being a promotion. It was a TV show that had wrestling matches in it. It's a better way to put it. So that's why they would have Drago like flying, and Aerostar was like a time traveler or something like that. But you try to do that in WWE where it's live on TV in front of the world, and I don't think people are going to be able to buy it. So I think this is really a bad move to do, and I think it's going to fizzle like every other time they've tried adding a supernatural element to something, because it just it always comes across as kooky, and I don't think people are going to buy it. So we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong, but we got this heel turn of Edge for what, 2.5 months, and now he's babyface again. I don't know. We'll see.
Jarrett, before you chime in, just wanted to piggyback off of what Seth said. Heel Finn Balor, great. Leading a stable, great, because he did it in Japan with Bullet Club. But now on Raw last night, as we were recording this, the group said, we're all equals. Fantastic.
What? That's just terrible. All right, where do I start on this PLE? I was much more interested in the bookends of this show than I was really anything in the middle. The women's three-way dance at the start was a hot opener. It was really good. It was fun to watch. I really thought Becky was going to win at the end there when she hit the manhandle slam on Asuka. I thought it was over and we had a new champ for sure. Nope, surprise. Nope, that wasn't to be. So good match, though. Really, really fun to watch. Most of the middle was filler. Like, this is like an episode of Raw, pretty much. Although the Judgment Day match that we were just talking about against Styles and Finn Balor and Liv Morgan was really good as well. I enjoyed that match. And then, of course, the main event. Like, I mean, Cody Rhodes, like, he comes out and he takes his jacket off and you just see the bruising on his chest and down his arm. And it's not just a little bruise, folks. Like, this is covering his entire right pack, over across his shoulder, down his arm. And you could just see the pain on the guy's face as much as he's trying to put the show on for the folks. You just knew. And thanks to Seth Rollins, who worked that perfectly, right? They did the things like I don't think it was the kendo stick where he was jabbing the end of it into his pack and things like that to really try and take advantage of that. And what a gutsy performance from Cody Rhodes. And Josh, like you said earlier, to never, ever say anything bad about Cody Rhodes again, because that was just all heart and guts, and it was super awesome. So really good. The middle was just, I made a couple sandwiches. I really didn't watch too much in the middle other than the multi-person or multi-gender tag match. This was a weekly TV show. This didn't need to be a PLE, and they're missing a lot of big names on the show. If it was supposed to be a PLE, you know, where's Roman? Where's all the other belts? Yeah, could have been a lot better. I would probably give it a thumbs in the middle, I think. Bookended by two really good matches, good match in the middle, and the rest was just empty calories.
Yeah, I as I said, I'll never say anything bad about Cody again. He's the man. All I could do sitting there, I was out for most of this pay-per-view as it was happening live. I happened to just get home in time to turn on the last several minutes of the main event. And all I could do while watching it was be like, ooh, ah, oh, oh, God, how is he doing? Oh, just, yeah. So, and if you saw the picture just before he went into surgery, that bruising had gone all the way down to his wrist. So hopefully they were able to, you know, Brandy said it was successful surgery. So hopefully he is on the mend and his rehab can start soon. In terms of, I'm just going to cut to the predictions results and to let you know how goofy this year has been for WWE. I got every match correct, which doesn't happen for a WWE pay-per-view. So I went, sorry, premium live event. So I went 7-0, 14 points. Seth and Jarrett tied 5-2 with 12 points for each of them. That brings us to the big scoreboard for the year. Jarrett and I are now tied, at least for wins and losses. 50 wins, 21 losses, but Jarrett has a commanding point lead of 164 to 145. Seth is in third place at 45 and 26 with 137 points. This is all through Hell in the Cell. Next up is Money in the Bank. We are skipping Forbidden Door, as we had previously mentioned. At least in terms of predictions, we will probably talk about it both before and after, but it will not be part of our predictions. And I just looked up the remaining pay-per-views that have been announced for WWE are all on Saturdays. So that answers my question from the last episode of when I didn't know when things were happening. It is all Saturdays. All right, we are bringing back Sound Off. Rant and rave about things that were pissing us off. We haven't done one in years, but I was riled up. Well, I was riled up about a week and a half ago. I've calmed down since then, but I'm pretty sure once I get going, I could probably sound pretty crazed. I will try to keep it as even keel as possible. But Seth, why don't we start with you? Sound Off, you have more than 60 seconds. You can go as long as you want. Seth, go.
Well, my favorite time of the year as far as wrestling goes is around the corner. And that is New Japan's annual round-robin tournament called G1 Climax. And that is a tournament where the eventual winner gets a title shot at Wrestle Kingdom, which is their version of WrestleMania, their biggest show of the year in the Tokyo Dome. And what's unique about this year is they by far have more entrants than ever before. They actually have 28 people. Normally they have about 20, and it's two blocks of 10. And how it works is it's actually similar to like a season of sports, just with wrestling. Because when you think about it, a sports season is basically just a big round-robin tournament. Every team fights everybody in their respective conference or area or whatever. And then the winners of those leagues or conferences go on to battle it out for the world whatever. You know, their total finals. That's kind of how the G1 works. The winner of Block A then it faces the winner of Block B, and then the winner of that is the winner of the tournament. But this time, they have 28 people. Like I said, I most of the names you probably won't recognize unless you watch New Japan, so I don't think I need to go through every single one here. There's only one person in here that could be considered representing AEW, and that's Lance Archer. But he's been a stable in New Japan forever. He's actually part of the Suzuki-gun stable. But everybody else here is pretty much known as a New Japan guy. Some of them have been seen in AEW, guys like Jeff Cobb, Tomohiro Ishii, and Jay White. Jay White's the world champion, by the way. So even the world champion takes part in this. And before anybody asks, the world champion wins, the champion gets to handpick his opponent. So there actually is an incentive for the champion to win. Now, they're not doing two blocks. They're doing four blocks. So I'm assuming the winners of the A and B block would face each other, and then the winners of the C and D block would face each other, and then you have a finals at the end of that. But I figured out we were going to do a rant, and there are times when we do sound off before I try to rant on something positive. So I figured I'll use this to rant something positive. I'm not taking any money for this. I'm not any sort of sponsor, or they're not sponsoring us. If there is a time to get the New Japan streaming service, it would be when the G1 is up and running, which I think is about a month. Like, it usually goes, I think, from mid-July to mid-August. And maybe the fact that they have four blocks instead of two, that might give guys more of a chance to heal between matches. Because a lot of times you see guys wrestling, you know, three, four, five matches a week, and they're all usually main event caliber matches, because this is supposed to be the elite of the world all in this grandiose tournament. So while we might not get as many dream matches this time around, we're getting more matches entirely, and maybe for the talent's sake, they'll have an easier time with the tournament because they won't be wrestling as many matches. So that's my rant. Looking forward to the G1 every year, and I'll step down now.
Jarrett, go!
I'm actually going to sit back and grab a bag of popcorn and some butter and a beverage, and I'm going to listen to Josh. Seth, thanks for the G1 info. I'm still listening. I've been sick for like 5 days, so I've got nothing to rant about other than being sick, and no one wants to hear that. So, Josh, take it away.
I don't remember how Norco would throw it to himself, so I'll just do it as third person. Josh, go! All right. So my rant and rave, and no, this is not positive, is going to be about women's wrestling in AEW and WWE. Let's start with Sasha Banks and Naomi's departure from WWE. This was because they reportedly felt disrespected by what they were asked to do with creative that was handed to them. The reason being is because they were told several months earlier to be a tag team, that you're going to be a tag team, make it as good as you can make it, and you're going to get a title run because you're winning the titles at WrestleMania. Well, they did that. They put their effort into it. They started dressing alike. They did it as much as you could do to make a team stand out and do women's tag team wrestling things. Then they were told, oh, by the way, we need you to fight each other in the six-pack challenge that Naomi's going to win, and then she's going to job to the Raw Women's Champion at a PLE. And then, Sasha, you're going to go over to your buddy Ronda on SmackDown, and you're going to job to her probably either at the same PLE or maybe for free on SmackDown, because that's how we like to do things. What about the women's tag team titles, you might think? Oh, well, we're just going to let them linger and float in the abyss until we decide what to circle back to, if we ever decide to circle back to it. So thanks for all your hard work and effort, but that's not really as important as the two top world champions. So we need you to job to them. So if you could, that'd be great. They said, F you, no thanks, we're out of here. And so they left. The leaving is not the problem. The problem is how Vince has no clue what to do with tag team wrestling, men or women. But it's impacting the women because they had to vacate the titles because Naomi and Sasha left, obviously. And they said a tournament will be determined at a future date to crown new champions. Well, everybody thought that was interesting because you don't have enough teams to run a four-team tournament, let alone 8-16 or what have you. You can't do one-on-one because that's just a tag team match, and one match, two teams, does not a tournament make. Then it was reported that, oh, WWE might quietly be retiring the tag team championships for the women because they don't really have any creative plans for them moving forward. Oh, so you're telling me that Sasha and Naomi are now vindicated because you don't have any plans for these championships. Well, that's just fine and dandy. But it's not like they don't know how to do it, because if you look in NXT 2.0, you have Toxic Attraction. You have Caden Carter and Caden Chance. You know how to do women's tag teams down there, but you don't on the main roster. Well, that's fantastic. Then if you just look at the women's divisions in total on the main roster, you have what's being fed to us as repetitive matches, and that doesn't just span the women's division, that's across the board. But we get the same matches over and over and over again. We're not building any stories. We're not telling any stories. We're not doing any creative character building. We're not doing any vignettes, any backstage promos. When they do get promos, they're very heavily scripted and they sound like robots and nothing that you would ever hear in a casual conversation. They don't know what to do with the women. As Seth alluded to, they had Becky Lynch in the 24/7 title. Crap, if you can imagine that. Not one Monday Night Raw, two Monday Night Raws in a row. The only saving grace of that was Becky Lynch saying, "Here, Dana, as I beat the shit out of you, you can keep your 24/7 title. I'm not interested in that." So they just shit on the 24/7 title, which is fine because it's crap anyway. But if you're gonna get rid of a title, get rid of the 24/7 titles, and maybe, I don't know, build some women's tag teams. Oh, but you can't because you released about 75% of the women that you had. So that's WWE, and I haven't even gotten into the SmackDown women's division, but I'm going to try to shave some time off here. Let's get over to AEW and Thunder Rosa as the world champion for the women's division. She is a lightning rod right now, because first she was complaining about not getting TV time leading into her match with Serena Deeb at Double or Nothing. And then they had what I thought was a great match at Double or Nothing. And then she was not on TV the Dynamite after the pay-per-view, which was explained away that she had an illness. Fine, whatever. But then she had a match the following week against Marina Shafir. Not that she won with her finisher to make her look strong. No, she won with the surprise roll-up. But now word is coming out that in that match that she was also sandbagging Shafir a little bit and no-selling Shafir's offense. So is Thunder Rosa justified? Is she a diva? Now you have problems at the top of your division. But that's not the main focus. The main problem is how AEW books their women's division. You have people who are brought over from WWE who pop the crowd on their debut and then disappear into YouTube purgatory. They come around every once in a while on TV and then they lose and they can't win any important matches. You need somebody who's consistently booking the division and building the division up. You had two people when AEW started that were booking the women's division. It was Brandi Rhodes and it was Kenny Omega. Neither one of those two are around now for different reasons. But what is the creative direction for the women's division in AEW? Unless you're going to hire somebody, and that somebody being a female who maybe has experience either in wrestling or in storytelling or, hell, both, you're not going to get anywhere with building any credible stories. And that's the main problem of AEW women's division, is that you cannot personally attach yourself, emotionally get invested in a majority of these women because they don't give you enough of a reason to. Unless you're going to hire Maria Kanellis or somebody like her to just book the division or help with creative or something, they're going to constantly have a problem. I had much more to say but my voice is trailing off, and I've pretty much said a bulk of what I wanted to say. So that is my soapbox rant on this edition of The Sound Off.
Damn, Josh, tell us how you really feel.
I would, you know, but, you know, time.
Yeah, those are both long-term solutions that we're not going to see get better next week kind of thing. So all we can do is hope.
Any final thoughts before we wrap this week?
If I count right now, I could be off. I might be off by a couple numbers here. But if I look at just the Raw and SmackDown rosters, I get 23 women. But like you said, none of them are actual tag teams. And that, of course, that doesn't count NXT. So unless you're going to bring somebody up who's only had experience for a few weeks or a few months, you know, that seemed like a tall order. So I can kind of see both sides when it comes to the Naomi thing. But at the same time, I can, you know, it's like what irks me about that is how people have taken that and then tried to apply it to like Toni Storm leaving or who else left WWE recently. But basically what it came down to is part of the difference is at least these people showed up, agreed to whatever they were going to do that night and then asked for their releases afterwards. They didn't walk off. But like I said, I can see both sides when it comes to the Sasha and Naomi thing. And if I recall correctly, both of them have quite a bit of time left on their contracts. So if they don't get released, they're basically going to be sitting at home for a while. That's all I can really add to it.
Yeah, with the session, the only thing, I mean, there were reports, some speculation that, and I think we kind of touched on this too, this is kind of a Sasha thing and Naomi tagged along. And I don't know, she might want to think or might want to have thought about her career a little more. I mean, she could be in the bloodline. I mean, that's a pitch that could work. And she wouldn't have to wrestle. She can kind of get her off by TV, but she can still be kind of useful. Not in wrestling, because that rear view or whatever her finishing move is absolutely terrible. But yeah, I don't know. It's caused quite a mess with the women's tag team titles in WWE. I wanted to ask folks, and I know we're trying to wrap up, but there are what, 3 PLE/pay-per-views coming up in the next 5 weeks. Is that correct? We could have a major swing in predictions coming up here.
We have, well, 2 out of the 3 we're doing predictions for. We have Money in the Bank on July 3rd, and then SummerSlam on July 30th. I'm sorry, July 2nd and July 30th. So 4 weeks apart, we have 2 big pay-per-views. The Forbidden Door is June 26th. But that's not counting towards our predictions. There are no PLEs in August, and then we have Clash at the Castle on September 3rd.
So we're getting 2 in 4 weeks and nothing in August. Okay. So a filler show, some Money in the Bank filler show. Okay. Well done, WWE. Well done.
You know, because it'll give them time to build up storyline. Oh. More shows with Roman Reigns. Yay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next week, I don't know what we have planned for next week, but we'll have something in mind. We'll talk about wrestling. We'll talk about the news and whatever else comes across these airwaves. But until then, thank you once again for downloading, listening, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. You can visit us at twbpodcast.com for posts and episodes. Visit the mothership, if you will, at behindthesquaredcircle.com, home of the Behind the Squared Circle podcast network. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments at Twitter at TWBPShow. On Facebook at facebook.com/BehindTheSquaredCircle and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter at TheBaconRev and you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening and we will talk to you again soon with more from The Wrestling Brethren.